from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor, 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Friday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app, 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Action-packed show for you coming up today at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Emory Hunt will join us, who does a great job covering college football and getting you set for the NFL draft, which will be next week, which does commence on Thursday night. Justin Termini from Sirius XM NBA Radio will be stopping by at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And then in the final hour of the show, joining us in studio is our pal, the Steamroller, Matt Frivola, who is a UFC fighter. You remember him from November when he joined us after his big knockout at Madison Square Garden. Now he's fighting coming up the first week of May, so 2 weeks from now, May 6th, as he has a fight up against a big-time fighter who's ranked top 15th in their division. So we will chat it up in studio with the Steamroller in Matt Frivola. A whole lot to do, but first up, producing this extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
His dumb producer, Hot Take Hickey.
So really, all of the optimism between the Suns and the Clippers was really let out, all the air was let out of the balloon last night when you found out this series, okay, is at one apiece, it's shifting to LA, and then right before the game, Kawhi Leonard is announced out, and you don't need the reminder, but we'll give it to you anyway. You know that Paul George is not playing in this series and is not expected to ever play in this series. So going into last night, I guess you could say it was like a minor league juicy storyline just because of what happened the night before when you saw Giannis Antetokounmpo be out for the Bucks and they still won and the Miami Heat lost that game. And also Ja Morant was out for the Grizzlies and the Memphis Grizzlies still won, finding a way to even up that series up against the Los Angeles Lakers. But when you looked at that game last night with Paul George already out and then you get a double whammy of Kawhi Leonard being out too, there was no expectation. There was no thought that the Los Angeles Clippers could win the game. And last night, I guess if you're a Suns fan, the good news is you won the game. It is 2-1 in this series. But I've been very disappointed with the Phoenix Suns through their first three games of the NBA postseason. And I know we had Kevin Ray on, who's the voice of the Suns, earlier in the week, and he said this isn't championship or bust, but it is championship or bust for the Phoenix Suns. Now, let me be clear here. When I say championship or bust, if they don't win at all, it's not like you blow up the entire team and you make big-time moves and you don't run it back. You're clearly going to run it back when you just got Kevin Durant, but you don't know how long the window is for this team for many reasons. Number one, Chris Paul is only getting older. And number two, even though Kevin Durant is quote-unquote happy right now, we've seen him move around a bunch in his career. Now, I fully do believe, even whenever CP3 walks away or the Suns say goodbye to CP3, this trio of Durant, Booker, and DeAndre Ayton, because I guess he's going to stay in Phoenix. I know he signed the deal last offseason, but it felt like there was a contentious relationship between him and Monty Williams. I guess whatever happened there in the closeout game up against the Mavericks from a year ago, the hatchet has been buried, and I guess they have settled their differences and are trying to win a championship together. There will still be a belief that they could win a championship whenever Chris Paul does walk away, but this is a golden opportunity for Phoenix, even though Durant only was able to play 8 regular season games with his teammates, because this Western Conference is as open as ever. Like, you could get on the radio today and you could be like me and say you're concerned or it's underwhelming what the Suns have done so far. But in a 7-game series in the Western Conference, who do you feel all that worried about? If you're a Suns fan, who gives you some apprehension? And when you go through the list, you kind of have to make arguments for teams, and you don't even know how much of a reach it is when you're making that argument for that team. And like right now, I would only have a good amount of confidence in one team potentially beating the Suns, even though I think what the Suns have done through the first three games has been a lethargic effort. But at least they're going to survive. You know they're going to win four games in this. Even if this series goes to seven games, I do believe the Suns are going to advance to the next round. So maybe as you go on and the stakes get raised, you see a cleaner style of basketball. But really, you look at that Western Conference, the only team you could have a lot of confidence in are the Denver Nuggets. We know what Nikola Jokic is. He's a back-to-back MVP award winner. He won't win it for a third straight time. Definitely has the statistics this year to win it for a third time in a row. But it's going to go to Joel Embiid. But the biggest thing so far for the Denver Nuggets, and you could only grade what you have seen so far, is in that second game, Jamal Murray sent a big statement up against the Minnesota Timberwolves that the Jamal Murray that we saw a few years ago in the postseason is now back. He has survived the injuries, and he is back to competing at a very high level in the NBA postseason when he scored 40 points the other night. Because you look at the construction of the Nuggets are a team a few years ago, right before Murray tore that ACL up against the Golden State Warriors, that you had a good sense of confidence and belief in, and you know Jamal Murray is that good complementary piece to Nikola Jokic. And my greatest concern whenever you have a big that is your best player like Nikola Jokic or Joel Embiid, you need someone that could finish the games in the final two minutes. And we know the Sixers don't have that in James Harden because he's not a finisher in the big moment. But Jamal Murray, we have seen him before finish games and do a tremendous job. So the way that I look at this now with Denver, with Jamal Murray, and I know it's only two games in the postseason, but after you tear that ACL and after you miss an entire year, you miss some of this year, it was like, how long are you going to be able to knock off the rust and then also mentally get back in a good spot? And I like what I see so far from Jamal Murray. But outside of Denver, you're really reaching here if you're going to tell me any of those other teams have a great shot of taking down the Suns. And let's be real about this. You're on a collision course, even though the Suns have been underwhelming. And I think even though they're up 2-1 in this series, they have not played a clean game whatsoever so far against a team that they're limping with injuries. When you look at Paul George not on the court, Kawhi Leonard not on the court for game three, we are on a collision course where what will have the feel of the Western Conference final is going to happen in round number two, most likely, with the Denver Nuggets going up against the Phoenix Suns. And that's not me telling you that all these other teams like aren't great or aren't good, but there's questions about those other teams outside of Denver and outside of the Suns who you just wonder if the chemistry is going to be there. Because through the first three games of their opening round series against the Clippers, I'm not saying ooh and ah, I'm afraid of this Phoenix Suns team. And let me be clear, my thought heading into this postseason just last week that the Suns should be in the NBA Finals. And I don't know if that's going to happen. I really do believe whoever wins that Suns-Nuggets series, I know this is not a big, bold take, is going to go to the NBA Finals out of the Western Conference. But I can't tell you I really believe in Memphis. I don't even know if Memphis is going to get out of their first round up against the Lakers. If the Lakers end up advancing out of the first round, I know you have LeBron. I know you have Anthony Davis. But that team just has not been clicking all throughout the year. And there's always injury concerns with the Los Angeles Lakers. The Kings are a phenomenal story. And I would root for a team like the Kings to get to the NBA Finals. De'Aaron Fox is incredible. There's questions, though, about their defense. And even if Golden State comes back, and I don't believe Golden State will, they got game three. I expected them to win game three. I'm not shaking in my boots if I'm the fan of the cowbell-ringing Sacramento Kings until they drop game four. Because if you drop game four, you miss the moment being the best road team in the Western Conference, having the second most road wins in the NBA to take advantage by grabbing one up against Golden State in either three or four. I expected Golden State to win game three. I do not expect them to win game four. But for Sacramento, the thought before the year was maybe at best, and this was even coming from their play-by-play guy the other day, maybe at best they would avoid the play-in tournament and be a six seed. No one saw Mike Brown winning unanimous coach of the year, and no one saw the Sacramento Kings being a three seed. But like when you look at it, if you told me that Denver won't be in the finals and the Suns won't be in the finals, I guess that team that I have the most confidence in, based off what I've seen so far, would be Sacramento. But I don't really believe that Sacramento is going to the NBA Finals. So the point on the Suns is they may be able to survive, and they will survive this first round series. But when they really get tested against a team that is healthy and against a team that is championship caliber, like they probably will in the next round, you got to take it to a different level. And if this is your preseason, even if it's in the playoffs, so be it. But I can't sit here after what I've seen through the first three games and tell you I feel great about the Phoenix Suns. And going into the playoffs, I thought Phoenix would go to the NBA Finals. This may be in the moment, and maybe I'll feel different about it when they meet up, coming up in the second round between Denver and the Suns. But right now, I would lean in a slight fashion to Denver beating the Suns if they were to play this series coming up next week in the second round. So, Hickey, when you look at this, I know it's weird to kind of slam a team that's up 2-1 in a series, and maybe they know they don't have to exert all this energy to go on out and take down a team like the Clippers, who are the walking wounded. But I don't like that game one effort where they were flat. Then game two after losing, you needed them to show up to start. They did not do that. And last night, with no Paul George, as he's likely out for the entire series, then Kawhi Leonard missing this game, I never thought they were going to lose the game, but it was not a performance where they just took it right away to the Los Angeles Clippers and said, no, 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 not tonight. You don't have the weapons to beat us. And they let them hang around, and they are lucky, Phoenix, that they didn't get burned last night. And Norman Powell goes for 42. Russell Westbrook goes for 30. And they were still able to win, but if it wasn't for really Devin Booker, that's a bad performance by Phoenix last night. So, Hickey, how concerned are you about the Suns? Because I still really, truly believe that only the Suns or Nuggets could get to the NBA Finals this year out of the Western Conference. And I've just been more impressed through the first two games with the Denver Nuggets than I have for the first three games of the Phoenix Suns. And let's be real, with the players that are available right now, the Timberwolves are probably a tougher opponent than the Los Angeles Clippers, but the Nuggets really haven't had to break a sweat all that much through their first two games. The first game was a blowout, and the second game, it looked like it was going to be a blowout. Then the Timberwolves said, Undertaker moment, let me rise from the dead for a little bit, and then the Nuggets just dominated them down the stretch in that contest.
The Suns' play is very concerning. As someone who picked them to win the entire thing, I am extremely worried because
they picked them to win the entire thing?
Yes.
Oh,
I think we'll get a repeat of Suns-Bucks, and I think the Suns will win, but it has been ugly can be through three games when you're up 2-1. They look like a team that's never been in the playoffs before with how uncharacteristic they have been turning the ball over. Chris Paul's terrible. He's absolutely been awful so far these first three games. They're playing no complimentary basketball. When the defense is playing well, the offense sinks. When the offense is hitting all their shots, the defense can't stop a nosebleed. They can't put a team away, even when we saw that sluggish first half against the Clippers in game one, and then all of a sudden they came back, then they couldn't put the Clippers away. Yesterday, they tried their best and their damnedest to hand the Clippers the game late, and so even when they got some momentum, still could not put the Clippers away without Paul George, without Kawhi Leonard. It has been very ugly. It's been very disappointing so far, and it is concerning.
I'll tell you, Boston's been impressive. Not that they could really impress that much in their first round series, but just how decisive those games have been in favor of Boston, how lopsided they've been, that's why it's impressive. Denver has been really impressive through the first two games, especially with the way that Murray's playing. The Bucks, it's tough to evaluate the Bucks. They lose game one. We know Miami is a veteran team. And then in game two, you win without Giannis. So sure, that kind of eliminates any concern you had from game one. But moving forward, what's the health of Giannis Antetokounmpo looking like? And then you have the Suns who have just been so blah. And you know they're going to win this series, but they haven't done anything to make you really believe in them. And I think most people heading into the playoffs would say, if I gave you four teams that could win a championship this year, you would take two in the East and two in the West. The two in the East would be Milwaukee and Boston, and the two in the West would be Denver and the Phoenix Suns. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Do you think the Suns will still make the NBA Finals? 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. We've been talking about how the Suns in the Western Conference have been underwhelming through their first three games. Also, through their first three games, there's a team in the Eastern Conference that hasn't really impressed me all that much either. We'll get into that conversation next.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is The Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Hickey, I think I'm starting to become an unpopular person around our office here at 345 Hudson Street.
About time.
Wow, Hickey's in a good mood on a Friday. We still got to do 3.5 hours of radio, my friend. You better watch yourself. But I think within the big fella community here at CBS Sports Radio and down the hall at WFAN, which all operates under the Odyssey umbrella, I think anyone that is a larger human being is a little bit annoyed at me today. So earlier this morning on Boomer and Geo on CBS Sports Network, Peter Schwartz, who does updates here, was actually the first voice you've ever heard 10 years ago when the network did launch, as he did the first ever update on CBS Sports Radio. He is an enormous man. Like, I'm a large dude, and I'm 6'4", but Peter Schwartz has like 75 to 80 pounds on me. So Boomer was talking to him while Peter Schwartz was doing the updates, and out of nowhere, Boomer Esiason just said, like, Peter Schwartz, you got to be the biggest Jewish guy I've ever seen. And they started talking about big Jewish men. So I sent Boomer a text that Andre Tippett, who is a Pro Football Hall of Famer, converted to Judaism when he got married to his wife, Rhonda. And we were going through, and he goes, oh, yeah, Amari Stoudemire as well. Like, that was some of the names that did come up. And then out of nowhere, Boomer goes, oh, by the way, a large Jewish guy is texting me in Zach Gelb. And it got into the conversation on Boomer and Geo about how we could kind of build an offensive line here around CBS Sports Radio and WFAN. And my name was thrown out there as a tackle. Peter Schwartz's name was thrown out there as an offensive tackle. And then clearly Mraz's name was thrown out there as well to be a center, just a lot of beef right up the middle. And then I started to think when I was hearing this conversation, who else would be good on the offensive line? Now, Geo has slimmed down, but Geo did play offensive line in high school. So it's on Boomer and Geo. I figured I would put Geo on the offensive line. And then I had one more spot. Now, this was right when I woke up. I didn't have my coffee yet. And I was just thinking quickly. I was hot take Gelb for a second. I was taking a play out of your playbook. So I'm thinking around, like, who could I put in that other guard spot? And I thought for a second, maybe Chicken Parm Lou, who does the social media around here, because he's a large, girthy human being. And I said, I'm not going to do Chicken Parm Lou. Then I'm thinking about, like, who else is really big around here? And I was just, like, drawing blanks for some reason. And I couldn't think of another name. So then I said, oh, Pat Boyle is not a fat dude, but he's in shape and he's a little bit of a larger human being. So I said, oh, I'll make Boyle gain like 20 pounds and he could be a pulling guard. So I put this photo together of Peter Schwartz, myself, Geo, Mraz, and then also Pat Boyle. and said that would be our CBS Sports Radio WFAN offensive line. Now, right away, I got one response where it was an egregious error. And I will totally admit, Boyle's out because Chris McMonagle said, oh, what about me? And he's 100% right. And I told Chris, you should be honored because I didn't even think about you. So I must not associate you being a slob. Because let's be real. If you're on the offensive line, you kind of get associated with being a slob. And then I got some other names that have been thrown out there. Like Big Zoo, that's fine. I just don't, like Hickey, you look at me like, oh, how do you leave off Big Zoo? Is Big Zoo quick on his feet?
He'd be a good guard.
He'd be a good guard?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Absolutely.
So Big Zoo would definitely be in the conversation. And then a lot of other people in the office were like looking at me today that are larger human beings. And they were like, oh, what are you doing? Like Pete Hoffman? I wouldn't say that. Like Pete Hoffman is trimmed down. I don't think he could play on the offensive line. Tom Izzo in digital, I think, was a little bit annoyed. So if you're anyone that's on the larger side, which there's a lot of people on the larger side here in radio, just in general, like Hickey walks around and people think he's like Channing Tatum sometimes. And let me tell you, Hickey doesn't even dress up that much. Like you are a man of fashion, but today you come in with your hair combed, some blue light glasses and a Knicks sweatshirt. And that's pretty much fashion around here. But overall, like I don't think my line was that bad. Now, full admission. McMonagle has to be in. And I quickly made the edit, kicking out Pat Boyle, and he's like, what the bleep? Like, he's mad at me, too. And McMonagle's in there, so I think it's a fair offensive line. Maybe you could have Big Zoo as, like, the two-deep guard, but who am I kicking out if we wanted to make Big Zoo a starter?
Gio. He's too skinny now.
Yeah, but...
he's too small.
It was part of the bit in the conversation.
He would get mauled by a defensive tackle. But he would get mauled.
His weight fluctuates. In the summer, it's skinny Gio. And Gio will even admit this. I had a conversation with this with Gio and Mraz a few weeks ago when we were all in the office at the same time. Like, Gio's skinny now. In like 3 months, he'll put the 20 pounds that he lost right back on easily.
He'd be a good fullback tight end hybrid. Blocking tight end. Sixth man on the line.
I don't think he's tall enough to be a tight end.
Fullback.
Okay, fullback, fine. So you're telling me I have to kick Gio out?
Yes.
And put Big Zoo on that offensive line?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Peter Schwartz, though, also would get abused like a turnstile in Penn Station pre-COVID. I love Peter. He's a big dude. You got to put him on the line. But he could look like, who was that tackle all those years ago that just got abused in the Super Bowl? It was whoever the tackle was for the Carolina Panthers. I forget his name, when Von Miller was just abusing him all throughout that game. That could be Peter Schwartz.
Well, I don't know about tackle for Peter. He's big, but he's not fast.
Well, you can't play him at guard.
You have to be athletic to play tackle. Why can't you play him at guard? You got to put him at guard.
He's too tall. He's too tall to be a guard.
But he's too slow to be a left tackle. He's not slow. Now, the edge rushers is about speed. You got to be quick on your feet. He's, to me, does not seem like someone who can shuffle their feet very fast.
But also, I think the interior part of that offensive line is actually the most important. Because as much as I love Mraz, I saw a video of Mraz blocking, I guess going up against Gio. I think Mraz could be a liability. Like, Mraz is the perfect center, but I think he's going to need some help on the interior part of that line with the left guard and the right guard. So I think I need a stronger presence than Peter Schwartz. Like, I can't have liabilities in my guard spots. I'd rather put Schwartz out at right tackle and just hope the speed of Tiki Barber being our running back and Boomer Esiason, quick two-step drop, then throw that football, will make up for Peter Schwartz maybe being a little clunky.
I think C-Mac left tackle would be definitely the move.
Whoa. I'm the left tackle here.
Wow. Okay.
I'm the left tackle. There's no doubt about it.
Okay.
Compared to C-Mac? C-Mac is a guard at best.
Wow. You just, okay. I didn't know you were the captain and also the one now calling your own shots. That's all.
I didn't say I was the captain, but I'm definitely the left tackle over Chris McMonagle. It's no offense to Chris, but I'm definitely the left tackle. He could be the right tackle. He's not playing the left side of it. If that's the case, it's like the reverse of Orlando Brown. Well, actually, no. Orlando Brown was the right tackle, and then he wanted out because they wouldn't put him back on the left side. Then I'd be requesting a trade somewhere else, you know, to another team inside of the Odyssey company. And Ack just waved goodbye to me, so... I'm sure Ack would just be ready to deal me for like a bag of potato chips.
McMonagle was an all-county tackle in high school.
That's fine. Now, is that true? He was an all-county tackle?
Yeah.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
I think that's embellished a little bit.
I spoke to his former coach.
Did you really?
That's how I know.
It's okay. Yeah. I was offensive lineman of the year for Comeback High School my freshman year.
Okay. Would you play the other three?
I stopped after my second year, and I went into broadcasting, and I want to play the final 2 years. But
oh no way! So okay.
It worked.
Huh?
It worked. It wasn't because that wasn't good enough.
I'm not saying it didn't work. But I'm
did
just
McMonagle
saying.
Get asked to walk on the Temple football team?
Well, I mean, there's a little size difference there. You project very well with your measurables. That's what I'm just saying.
I'm just saying. I think McMonagle.
I would have looked at you.
To...
I would if I was Matt Rhule. I would have looked at you and hey, buddy, come here.
All I'm saying is, if they want me as a tackle, I got to be the left tackle. McMonagle's the right
Look
tackle.
At you making demands?
Well, actually. No, yeah. Well, Boomer is a lefty.
Yes.
So would that be better than if I was on the right?
Too late now. You didn't figure that out.
Nah, I still want to be the left tackle because that's where the money's at.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
No offense. If McMonagle misses a block and Boomer Esiason gets sent to the hospital and we lose our quarterback, then that could be it for Boomer Esiason. I don't know if Boomer's around here for the long term.
He's stuck around. He's in good shape.
The better question is, around our office, who would be the quarterback if Boomer ever left?
This is why, you know, it's the Jordan Love situation.
We have to draft another quarterback.
Tiki will go option.
We maybe have to go like a little wildcat offense.
Exactly.
We'd be like the Miami Dolphins back in 2007 or 2008, whenever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we go a little wildcat offense. Yes. And by the way, Hickey, your pal Ryan Leaf, did you know Hickey's like best friends with Ryan Leaf?
I did not. Seems like a nice guy, though, Ryan Leaf, when he's been here.
Yeah, very good dude
talk about redemption stories.
Yeah, but Hickey used to produce Ryan Leaf.
I didn't know that.
And Ryan Leaf came up with the name Hickey's Pickies. They would do picks together.
Oh, better than my nicknames for him.
Yeah. Actress goes, Hickey, I don't like you. That's the nickname. And then he sings a song with it. You do have a lot of songs about people around
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
But the Hickey, I don't like you is one of my favorites.
Yes.
That what is that, the Spotify top 10 at the end of the year? That would be on my Spotify top 10. But your boy Ryan Leaf, Hickey, he put out a mock draft. You want to hear his first 10 picks? Because they're very interesting.
Sure, let's hear him.
As Perloff would say, they go against the grain. C.J. Stroud, first pick overall. This was issued today. First pick overall to the Carolina Panthers. Are we all missing something here? That Ryan Leaf maybe has some inside information? Because it seems like everyone's saying Bryce. Now, the Texans would love this. But everyone's saying pretty much right now that Bryce Young's going to be going to the Carolina Panthers.
I like someone who stands their ground. Maybe he's been saying T.J. Stroud the whole time, and he's not moving now, not budging.
Then, too, he had Bryce Young going to the Houston Texans.
Don't like that.
He then... Oh, you're not going to like this. He then had Arizona trading back to 12. Houston, I think Houston has the 12th pick in the draft. Whatever their second first-round pick is. He has Houston coming up and then getting Will Anderson. A double whammy with Alabama. That would be the worst case scenario for you, Hickey. If that ends up coming to fruition, Bryce Young going to the Texans, the guy that you wanted for your Colts, and then they also trade up into the first round and get Will Anderson. That would be bad for you.
That would not be good. That would be tough to see Will Anderson off the edge and Bryce Young kill my team twice here.
Now, who do you think he selected for your quarterback in it for?
I will say Anthony Richardson.
You are correct, Amundo, on that. Then 5, Jalen Carter with the Seattle Seahawks. 6, Christian Gonzalez to the Detroit Lions. Tyree Wilson to the Raiders at 7. Devin Witherspoon, 8 to the Falcons. Peter Skoronski to the Bears at 9. And then how about this one? Now, he's projected to go in the first round, but I haven't seen him. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Hickey. I haven't seen people project Nolan Smith.
Wow.
10th overall.
Going back to the Georgia well.
Yeah, because last year they took Jordan Davis. And they also took N'Kobe Dean last year, too. So they'd be going back to the Georgia well to go get Nolan Smith in at 10. That's kind of, that last one, my two takeaways from this, outside of the whole Texan thing, is Stroud going 1, because I don't think that's happening. And then Nolan Smith going 10. Like, it wouldn't shock me if the Eagles took a pass rusher. It wouldn't shock me if they took an offensive lineman. I think they should take Bijan Robinson. And did you see Bijan Robinson revealed that Dan Patrick only took 2 in-person visits with teams?
Did not see that. Was he rep by Drew Rosenhaus by chance? You know?
I don't think so.
That seems like a Rosenhaus move. He did that with Jalen Carter. Top 10 only.
Yeah, he said only top 10 only. I forget who the second team was, but one of the teams were the Philadelphia Eagles.
Makes sense.
So, and reportedly Howie Roseman liked the way that Bijan Robinson answered, like, he's kind of like a weapon, not just a running back. So, I was a little bit surprised, and Dan Patrick looked shocked when he did say that Bijan Robinson, when he was on his show, that he only had two official visits with teams, and one of them was the Philadelphia Eagles. And the other, you want to take a guess? Yeah, take a guess.
Chargers.
It's another NFC team.
Vikings.
No. NFC team that you like to throw players to this team.
Commanders.
No.
Rams.
Not San Francisco, as Zach takes that guess. Yeah, take one more guess. I'll give you each one more
Buccaneers.
Guess. Yes. So the Bucks and the Eagles, which if you're Tampa Bay, you can't be drafting Bijan Robinson. Like the Eagles, I get it because they have all the makings of a Super Bowl team. Tampa Bay, you're so far away. I think you got to fill those holes.
Yeah,
with
Baker,
other areas
what are you talking about?
Yeah. So you thought he was a top five quarterback last year in the NFC. How'd that work out?
Well, he beat Josh McDaniels and the Raiders after 40 hours in LA. So, you know what? He still got it.
And let me tell you this.
Baker still got it.
If we evaluated Hall of Fame players and what is right by if you could beat Josh McDaniels, then a lot of people would be Hall of Famers.
Jeff Saturday would be the best head coach in NFL history. That's for sure.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It's dream come true time as Gervonta Tank Davis and King Ryan Garcia go toe-to-toe in a battle for undefeated supremacy this Saturday, April 22nd on Showtime pay-per-view. Go to sho.com/PPV and snag a front row seat. So I saw this story from earlier today that Quintez Cephas, CJ Moore of the Detroit Lions, and Shaka Tony of the Washington Commanders, per release by the NFL, are suspended indefinitely through at least the conclusion of the 2023 season for betting on NFL games in the 2022 season. These players may petition for reinstatement at the conclusion of the 2023 season. Also, Stanley Berryhill, and then here's the big one, Jameson Williams of the Lions, are also suspended from the team's first six regular season games of the 2023 season. Those players, though, are eligible to participate in all offseason and preseason activities, including preseason games. The suspension will take effect at the final roster cutdown. Now, you may be saying, why were three players suspended for the entire season and then two were suspended for only six games? Well, the two players that were suspended for six games weren't betting on NFL games. I saw in the report they were betting on college football games, it's believed, but they were doing so from an NFL facility. Now you can't bet on NFL games, and if you do, you get popped for a year. We just saw that happen to Calvin Ridley, and that's what just happened to Cephas Moore and then also Tony. But for Berryhill and Jameson Williams, they were just reportedly betting at the facility, and they were betting on college football games. And Hickey, I'm really curious to see what the reaction is to this. Now, the rules are the rules. So you can't bet on NFL games, and you can't bet at the facility if you're going to bet on other things. So you have to know that. Is this an issue? And I saw Mike Florio raise this question. Is this the Lions? Because you see how many Lions players are associated with this. Is this the Lions not telling the players or reiterating to the players the rules, or the players not listening? Like that, we just don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if it was like kind of, you're in the locker room, right? You have a bunch of players here on the Lions. They're like, oh, I'm going to bet on this. I'm going to bet on this. You get four guys that don't follow the rules. And just how accessible it is, maybe they didn't think they were doing anything wrong, but you got to know the rules. So even if you maybe want to put blame on the organization if they didn't enforce this, the players still have to know the rules. And I don't know exactly when all this did come about, but we just saw Calvin Ridley get suspended for an entire season. So that should serve from some sort of reinforcement that Ridley a year ago was suspended for an entire season. That was pretty early in the offseason process, if memory serves me right. So you really have no excuse here. Like, I do believe, Hickey, people that are like our age, we don't look at gambling as it was frowned upon. Like, there's a lot of people that are older than us that are surprised how much gambling we talk about, because remember when Brent Musburger or Al Michaels would ever like mention or just make a reference of gambling or allude to a spread? Like when Al Michaels would go, oh, that was big for some people, whenever a field goal or touchdown was scored late that could have impacted the over-under or the spread, and everyone's like, oh, that's taboo, oh, that's bad. That used to be a big deal, but now we're growing up in an era where in most places gambling is legal. Now, I can understand why if you're running a sports organization, a sports league. You don't want your players betting on the actual games because then integrity gets called into question. But with all that being said, the NFL markets the crap out of gambling. So the players shouldn't be breaking the rules, but I do think a lot of people that are younger going to have the reaction kind of like, so what? That you had two players just because they were in the facility bet on college games. Betting on NFL games is a totally different thing. I don't know what if the bets are placed on their team, other teams. I don't know the information there. But the NFL's biggest fear is that you have information and then, like, let's just say you bet on against your team and then people just kind of question the integrity of the game. But overall, you're not allowed to do it. But I do think there will be a lot of people here, Rye, they'll have the reaction like, so what, because of and how much frequency people just casually now place bets in the palm of their hands.
I mean, this is a big deal. I look at gambling at this point for athletes like PEDs. If you're dumb enough to do and get caught, I feel no sympathy for you. I feel no, you know, oh, this is ridiculous. This is way over the top. If you're the NFL, if you're any sports league, you, like you mentioned before, you cannot have your players gambling on anything, really, frankly, because the last thing you need to call into question is outcomes and the integrity of the game. And once that comes into question, all of a sudden now you're the WWE and you lose a lot of fans. Everything that you do is always in question and you never, ever shake that.
But there is a difference if you're an NFL player betting on an NFL game. Like that, I totally agree with you. If you're an NFL player and you bet an NFL game, you're an idiot. It's just plain and simple, especially after what we saw happen with Calvin Ridley. Whether you don't like it or not, it's a totally different story. Whether the league markets gambling or not, it's a totally different story. You know you're not allowed to do so as an NFL player. That I'm with you on. But I do feel like there's going to be some people that are going to say, so what? But the only reaction where I was like, eh, I don't love it, is when you find out that Berryhill and then Williams, and I was looking forward to see Jameson Williams play an entire season this year, like they're betting on college football games. Do you think that's a big deal?
No, but I get why the NFL cares. It's just, to me, it's a slippery slope. If you're betting on the college football, what's the difference facility than, you know, betting on NFL games? It just, to me, just leads you down a path of getting there. And I just don't think if you're the NFL, you can, or again, any league, you can afford even the question to come about. That's, again, just the question itself can be damaging enough to turn fans off, to have all these sponsors now with all the gambling sports books shoving money down these leagues' pockets. All of a sudden now, if they are leery of, I don't know, are the games in question? And if their fans that are giving them money are questioning now, can I really trust this outcome of the NFL? Is this really being played to how it's supposed to be and not, you know, and ruining the integrity or not? That's when all of a sudden a lot of money is lost for gambling sites. And then all of a sudden then those sports leagues are going to feel it when the lack of money from gambling sports books stops flowing to their specific sport.
And then also, just to reiterate, the gambling policy, which is annually reviewed with all NFL personnel, including players, prohibits anyone in the NFL from engaging in any form of gambling in any club or league facility or venue, including the practice facility. So that's just the policy. And it says, reviewed with NFL personnel, including players. That it gets reviewed annually. So if that's the case, did the Lions not... Or I don't know if it's like a league official that comes in. I don't know if it's the responsibilities on the team. Do they just not review the policy with the players? Or do the players just not listen?
Well, they also had several staffers dismissed earlier this month because of gambling violations. So it sounds like a Lions problem more than just players doing whatever the hell they want problem.
And with this, that's a good point that you bring up on the staffing front. If you're a player and you see others doing it, and like let's say openly like a staffer was doing it, you're like, oh, well, if he could do it, then I could do it as well. And maybe you forget about the rule. But still, you got to know you can't gamble if you're in the NFL. You saw what happened to Calvin Ridley. It's plain and simple. By the way, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about the Sixers through their first three games? Totally different topic real quickly. Because they have not looked good.
I mean, it's weird to say not at all because not that there's I expected no them to play against the Nets, but I don't think they're getting past the Celtics. So it's to see them struggling against the Nets, I'll say it's on a concern factor of 5. But it's just like that's what I kind of saw coming.
Celtics and Sixers, when they meet up in the second round, Celtics and how many? If I had to ask you today.
5.
Why not a sweep?
I think Philly would get one in the home court. I'll give the home fans their respect that Philly deserves.
Yeah, I'll say 2. I'll say that they'll get 2, the Sixers. So you'll go Boston in 6. But I don't think it's going to be like one of those six-game series where you ever think Boston is going to lose. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Emery Hunt will join us next as we'll preview the NFL draft.